Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I wrote the Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, as well as the Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. This episode features one of three guests who were part of my weekly hour-long NPR show broadcast over the air every Sunday on WLIW-FM 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island where it has broadcast continuously for over 15 years. This show is about dogs, cats, and other creatures who share the planet with us. Please check out my other Pet Talk podcasts at TracyHotchnerPets.com. This show would not be possible without the longtime support of Woruva, the pet food company founded and privately run by David Foreman, who named it after his rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva is a quirky name for a company with whimsical names for the dozens of different cans and pouches of cat food they make. But what sets them apart is how serious David is about high-quality nutrition. They were the first pet food company to use human edible ingredients and process them in the same facilities that make human food, remaining privately owned and run, accountable only to their own high standards. This show is also made possible with the generous support of Dr. Elsie's, the privately owned litter and cat food company founded by Dr. Bruce Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian. He personally created many styles of litter to make sure that even the fussiest cats would not have out-of-litter box problems, the number one reason people abandon their kitties. Dr. Elsie also created his own brand of cat food called Clean Protein, the first dry cat food I can recommend because it's based on the protein found in a cat's natural prey. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of my New York Cat Film Festival, of which I am the founder and director, along with the annual New York Dog Film Festival, which premiere in New York City every October and then travel the USA and Canada supporting local animal welfare groups. Go to dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com to find out when we'll be where. I am delighted to meet the new board president of Not One More Vet, NOMV. You know, I've talked about it quite a bit on the show, and my interest in the emotional burdens and challenges for veterinarians, and the fact that an organization had to spring up to protect those who are in the profession. Not One More Vet Committing Suicide is what that name means. And so it's very interesting to me to meet the new board president, Dr. Brian Borquin, who has his own clinic that he's the owner and founder of in Boston called the Boston Veterinary, and to learn about the Lifeboat app, which is a new benefit to veterinarians from NOMV. Dr. Borquin, it's very nice to meet you. And I'm wondering how a man who runs his own veterinary clinic and has all the burdens of doing that, why it is that you were able to find time. There must be a strong personal reason to be a board president. You were already on the board. That's very time consuming. But to be a board president, even more so. I mean, you wind up having to talk to people like me, probably. So why does this matter to you so much?
Well, getting to talk to people like you is even more reason. So hi, everyone. Nice to meet you. I actually run five clinics in Boston.
Oh, so my God.
A network of five clinics.
Oh, my God.
In Boston, Bernie. But I would probably what has given me more impetus to take on a larger role with Not One More Vet. You know, running any one clinic is a job in itself. But as you get to know more veterinarians, more veterinary staff and their stories and their struggles, it hits closer and closer to home. And, you know, as someone who hopefully does it a little bit differently, where we really try to focus on our employees' mental health. You know, I started to see how working in my clinic was a different experience than it was at other clinics. And I know that not from my own experience, but from what others have told me. They said, you know, we didn't know that veterinary medicine could be like this. I've had a number of employees say we've given up on veterinary medicine. So, you know, having that knowledge and knowing that maybe I could make a larger difference in a larger global mm-hmm. impact, if you will, versus just the mm-hmm. Boston, you know, the stepping stone to this. And, you know, often as often happens when you do something, you know, well, they want you to keep doing it and doing it on a larger scale. So I was tapped to do this, and Yes, you know, the time commitment did have me a little nervous, but you know, it's such an important program, and if I can't make time for that and, you know, saving and helping my profession, then, you know, what else am I going to do with that time? Watch Netflix.
Wow.
So there may be a little bit less time to watch TV, but, you know, more time getting to talk to people like you.
Well, and it's what my goal, my desire is for the recipients of veterinary care, not the four-legged ones, because they don't have much to say one way or the other, not being very verbal. But the two-legged recipients of veterinary care continue to be mindful and aware and conscious and empathetic towards the front desk of a vet clinic, the people on the phone, the vet tech in the room, the veterinarian when he or she comes in. There seems to be a disconnect between those who receive veterinary care and those who are providing it, which is, on the providing side, a great deal of pressure, a great deal of holding oneself to a probably impossibly high standard with a constant rotation of challenges thrown at you every day as different people with different creatures come through the door. And yet those of us with those creatures seem to have, I guess, so there wouldn't be a need for not one more vet. We seem to have presumed that somehow you guys are there just for us to utilize and not to, I don't know about respect, Brian. I think that is one problem for veterinarians, that they are not seen by society as serious a doctor as a human medical doctor. But also, is it the recipient who feels more relaxed because veterinarians will call you as the human patient by your first name, whereas human medical doctors, some of them are very uptight and stiff about being called their first name, and they don't even want to call you by your first name. Everything has to be kind of on a pedestal. Do you think that the removal of the pedestal from the veterinary profession in the eyes of the users of your knowledge and your skill and your compassion, has that made you more vulnerable to people not being mindful of the challenges of giving that advice and that medical care?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, I think I'll start with the latter and then maybe touch the former. You know, I don't know that it has a lot to do with the name itself. I think it's multifactorial. I mean, even within our own clinic, you know, I'm Dr. B because no one can say my last name, Borkman, but my first name happens to be Brian. You know, in our clinic, we do try to use first name, Dr. Brian, Dr. Sarah,
right,
et cetera. I feel it feels a little warmer sometimes than using the last names.
Yes.
I want to establish that rapport. You know, some of the newer grads, they really like the last name just because they look young and they feel that it, you know, kind of deserves respect. So I think there's probably something there. I do think most of us do prefer the doctor. You know, we went to school 8 years to get that designation.
Right.
We owe a lot of money for those two letters. So we do like that recognition. But I think that, you know, the areas where veterinary medicine differs from the other, you know, human medicines, if you will, is a couple things. You know, one, because we work with animals who, as you said earlier, aren't verbal, who can't speak for themselves, you know, we're similar more to geriatrics or pediatrics in some ways, right?
That's right.
But the other is that our relationship is with the client. And so the client is having to take what's going on in their life, right? They're having a bad hair day, the mortgage is due, they lost their job, they're in a fight with their spouse. And we need to try to like take where their brain is at and make them focus on my patient, who's the four-legged animal in front of me. And you know, that poorly animal is not speaking for itself. So I'm having to basically translate from doggy language, kitty language, et cetera, to the person there. And then, so that's kind of issue number one, right? So sometimes you don't have their full attention. I'm having to try to get them off their phone. They've got their other things going on. And then there's our old friend money. Mm-hmm. When you go to your doctor, more often than not, if you have a good insurance plan, you put down your little card, you pay your $25 copay, and then it's, you know, and then it's easy street for, you know, I'm oversimplifying.
No, understood.
You often don't, you often don't have to have the doctor translating needs into dollars and cents, right? So they say, hey, you hurt here, go get this scan.
Right.
You say, yep, I'll go get the scan. And, you know, they'll probably make you set the appointment up yourself. You know, veterinarians have done such a good job of being all encompassing. You know, we used to make the appointments for you, find the referral, et cetera. And people still kind of want that level of care. But add to that, that, you know, after COVID, the amount of new pets there are, the amount of new treatments there are, right? So it used to be, I would never have to talk about a CT or MRI. Those weren't even reality.
That's right.
Legally, now I do have to talk about them. And then the price tag that comes with them. And so now I'm having to convince you as the client
right.
who does not hurt mm-hmm. that one, your animal hurts. Two, that more than likely you have to pay out of pocket. And then three, you kind of want to guarantee that I'm going to make it better because
right.
vets being so empathetic and so good at what we do that we, you know, at one point we were one of the most trusted professions, you know, we were above clergy at one point.
Yes.
But now, you know, you've read on Dr. Google that, you know, I'm out to take your money or Chewy can do meds better. So, you know, we have lost some trust with the advent of the internet. And then just the cost of things have gone up so much. So kind of my long-winded way of saying, I don't know that it's just respect. I think that there's just so many other voices. When I say voices, it doesn't have to be oral. It can be, you know, the people at the dog park, the dog groomer,
yes.
Chewy,
yes.
Facebook, forums. You know, people are getting so much competing information to put all that, you know, respect and faith and belief in the person in front of you. Who you may not have as big a rapport with because you've gone to three other vets and you've got a lot of other things going on and you've been on your phone. So I think, you know, while the internet has done some amazing things and I do like a client who comes in with some ideas, remembering that just because it's on the internet isn't true is a big thing. So I think there are tons of people come into the exam room already with thinking that we have an agenda other than just making your pet better. And you know that's a lot to put on one doctor, and then add to that you know we're having to convince you to do something because it's actually coming out of pocket, and then lastly, you know we are a service provider, and people forget, you know not forget, but we, you know we're in the medical field, but it's about customer service because we're having to convince you the customer, not the patient. And so we can get Yelped, we can get Googled, we can get talked about a next door neighbor. I mean, when was the last time you ever heard of your pediatrician or MD getting a bad Yelp review? It doesn't happen. You're protected in this
right.
huge conglomerate of a huge hospital versus you can go after one of my doctors by name and it doesn't even have to be true. And so, you know, all of that stuff leads to just an area, I think, of more stress than you normally would encounter in your typical, you know, medical exam consult. And then lastly, you know, if I can just speak to kind of the people who are drawn to veterinary medicine,
right.
you know, we tend to be perfectionists.
Mm-hmm.
It was the hardest of the medical professions to get into. We need to know all the species, not just one. You need to know dog, cat, horse, cow with passing proficiency, as well as the general knowledge about everything else that fly, floats, and scampers around. And
that's
so
right.
we're perfectionists. We often take things to heart. And we come from a profession that, you know, James Herriot with all of our role models. Well, James Mayer Herriot had a lot of mental health issues and lived a life that, you know, was half fictional. You know, we could never provide that level of care and still have a life. And so, you know, you're already taking a group of people who want you to do the best they can, and you're adding money challenges and being afraid of Googled and graduating with hundreds and thousands of dollars of loans. And then you come in and disrespect me in what may seem like just a, well, you know, why can't they take it? Sometimes it's the last straw.
Interesting.
And, you know, and that's why post-COVID,
So it's a really good, these points are so well taken because there is this sense, this sort of American sense that you can treat every provider of anything the way you do a dry cleaner. Hey, they lost the button on my jacket. I'm never going right. back there. As though that was equivalent to comments about a medical profession and that they didn't like the outcome. You made a really interesting point that not only are you supposed to convince me that my animal needs more diagnostics, we have to look and see what's wrong, and then you got to pay for it. And often the money doesn't go in the pocket of the veterinarian who's suggesting it, because very few vets, I would say none, have an MRI machine in their office or a CAT scan. So you have to go to a specialty place. So you're outsourcing it. But then, as you said, you have to also make the pet better. And the hard part is, what if you don't even have a diagnosis? I mean, how often, back in the day, whether it was human or veterinary, there was something called exploratory surgery. You don't know what's wrong with the dog or cat. We're going to open them up and have a look-see. And that was humans, too. Before we had all these machines, I mean, x-rays didn't even exist, but certainly not these more sophisticated ones and the sophisticated ultrasounds. So the idea that you could tell me that I should go and spend these thousands of dollars, which I hope that more and more of my listeners know, forget it, guys. You can't have a pet without pet insurance. It's impossible because it's unaffordable. I mean, even if you're rich as Croesus, it's unaffordable. You really need pet insurance. But even with all those diagnostics and $300 and $400 blood tests, the money goes to the lab, by the way, they may not, you, the doctor, may say, we honestly don't know what's wrong. I mean, how often does that happen? And does that undermine trust and confidence, even though you're just being completely honest?
It does. It does. And, you know, in the flip to that is, you know, you can run all these tests, and I've had clients say, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, it's great news. Everything came back normal. Well, then why did I bother? You know, and right. Sometimes not getting bad results is good, too. It's a slippery slope because, and I guess I should add to that. I'm always talking about the veterinary side. I mean, to the client side too. I mean, you know, we're not always seeing people at their best. They're scared. This is their baby.
Yes, yes.
No one wants to admit that they don't have money. So there's high emotions,
right.
Sometimes the outcomes, you know, I often have to say, I don't have a crystal ball.
That's right.
And the outcome doesn't always go the way you want. But, you know, the good situations are those clients who trust you, who take the time to understand. And, you know, and for the ones that you can be kind of a jerk, I've got five other ones who are wonderful. But, you know, back to that perfectionist thing again, right? I mean, how often do people focus on, the time that they landed that account versus the times that, you know, put in something else, the accounts that they lost or the sale that got away.
That's right.
And so, you know, we do the same thing. You know, we concentrate on the ones that didn't go the way we want. And if it was our fault or not, because we just feel like we let someone down. And, you know, you get enough of those going on, and that's where you can start to see a bit of a mental health crisis. You're letting people down. You're not providing the best care you can. You've got thousands and hundreds of thousands in school loans. You're being yelped online because I've been yelped on things that literally were not even under my control. I was like, that had nothing to do with me. Like, you didn't even provide that in the history. How would I even know to address that? Because you have to tell me that. The dog can't. And so it can start to be, it can just start you down a slippery slope where mm-hmm. each day just looks like Groundhog's Day.
Yes.
And it's just, you're not, and, you know, I mean, we're really, really intentional at Boston Veterinary Clinic about making sure our people take their vacation times. We make them take their lunch breaks.
Good.
We do outings. We do bonding experiences. We do huddles to problem shoot. I mean,
nice.
We do all that in other clinics, but a lot of other clinics don't. They're just trying to get through the day. And it doesn't matter what profession you're in. You can only spend so much time trying to get through the day before it starts to get you down
mm-hmm.
and you start to dread that day. And gosh forbid, who wants to go into work a day where you dread things and then add toxic culture and other things to it? And you can see why something like Not One More Vet has to be around, because it was kind of veterinarian's dirty little secret was the amount of, and I sometimes use the word veterinarian, I'll apologize. I should say veterinary professionals and veterinary staff. Right. That we were losing more to death by suicide. I mean, any loss is too much, right? But statistically, there were too many in our field. And we're not a huge field, right? We're not like dentists or some of these ginormous fields.
Right.
You know, we can probably speak to any veterinary professional, and they, if they don't know someone personally, they know of someone who's died by suicide. And so it makes it just a lot more, brings it home a lot closer. Once again, no death by suicide in any profession is good or something we want to see, but it brings it home and makes it a little bit more of a reality. And sadly, it also does it become a little bit more of a possibility. You know, veterinarians and veterinary staff, we have a different relationship with euthanasia than any other medical field.
Interesting point.
It is a treatment option for us. You know, it is a treatment option. Mm-hmm. You know, we can end an animal's suffering by giving them the gift of euthanasia, which means almost all of us have had to come to terms with that in a way that a lot of other medical professions don't, right? So it is a treatment. Now, we don't do convenience euthanasias in my clinic, meaning you can't come in and just say, oh, you know,
this
isn't the dog I wanted, right? Or, oh, I'm going to move and I can only have a dog under 40 pounds, so I'm going to get rid of this German Shepherd. So we don't do that. And thank gosh, you know, we don't. But we still can let an animal die who's in pain when I can no longer provide relief from pain and suffering, which means I'm one step closer to being okay with euthanasia.
Yes.
So add that to a really bad day. You've got four bad Google reviews, and you lost a patient, and you're in a fight with your spouse, and you're overdue on your bills. And over there, over on the other side of the room is a lockbox that you know has got something that could end your suffering. And so the availability, the fact that we have a different understanding and acceptance of it, and also because we're familiar with the properties of euthanasia, we're successful with it, which means we don't have those like, oh, you know, I'm not going to use an example, but say overdosing on pills, right? And fortunately, you know, the people survive. Most veterinary staff, when they do this because of their knowledge of it, they're successful. And so you don't necessarily always get that second time to give them the help. And sorry, that took over kind of a dark turn.
Well, it's
there.
Dark,
but I
think it is the reality, and it's the reason that NOMV exists, and it's the reason. I mean, I feel honored to have been asked to be on the, I think it's the advisory council or something like that, for NOMV. Yeah. Even though I'm not in the profession technically, but I reach a lot of people who need the profession to take care of their pets. And I think we need to be more mindful of it. I'm going to say, because every time you see any show on television or any news item, whether it's in the newspaper or on TV or the news, it always says, if you're having thoughts of suicide, even talking about this can be very triggering for people that are on the slippery slope. Mm-hmm. So I want to say, reach out to NOMV, Not One More Vet. If you're a vet or a vet tech or anywhere in the profession and listening to this, you're nodding and saying, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like, and that's why it feels that way. Please understand that Dr. Borquin and myself are obviously trying to help avoid anybody going down the slope, much less actually dying. So the Lifeboat app is something new that we were going to talk about, but we've had such an interesting conversation or running short on time. But it's an app that if you go to nomv.org, you can learn more about it. And it may not be you. You might be feeling just fine about your veterinary professional career, but you could look to the left and the right in that lunchroom if people aren't actually taking a lunch, which we think would be civilized. And you may need to suggest it to somebody else, recommend it, reach out, so that people don't feel alone. As far as social media, just with only a couple of minutes left, is it possible for you to block it, not read it? I mean, I don't read bad reviews of any books I've ever written. It just seems to me reading is so toxic. There's a lot of actors who are not exactly doing life-saving or life-threatening work. They won't read reviews. Nasty and mean has always been there. I mean, the critic for the New York Times, who used to review first plays and then movies, was nasty, a nasty bastard. He would say the most evil, vile, cruel things. I thought, why would any actor or director or writer ever want to read a review? Are you not able to keep from getting reviews? Because I don't think it's even appropriate for a doctor to be reviewed in a public forum. But can you and others in the field not block that junk?
No, unfortunately, you can't block it. It's open access. And, you know, to say some good things, we also get to acknowledge all our lovely clients who say wonderful things about us. And for the majority, there's way more of those than there are the other ones. But, you know, if someone does put up lies or untruths on there, you know, we do, that does give us a platform to correct it. Because unlike the old days where you just went to the vet because that was the town you lived in and you asked your aunt or the guy at the park and right. You take your dog. And so it was word of mouth. The first place people go now is to Google, right?
Yeah,
you
sure.
Say you Google and up comes a number, and we're small businesses. So if you can't protect that number, and I have like a three right. point something. So,
right.
you know, it's one of those
so you have
devils
to.
We've had to embrace.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I can say about this is, well, obviously, anyone who would do that is revolting on so many levels. But I guess it would be great if you could block them from ever coming back. That would help, but but not much. All I can say is I really appreciate that you have not one but five clinics. I'm sorry I didn't understand that when I was having a look before we spoke. Boston Veterinary has five clinics. And that you set out to make an environment that was appropriate to the challenges of the field and of doing that work hour by hour so that you can do it well, so you can feel good about yourself, so the people who come to you can feel the compassion and wisdom that all of you have to impart, even the freshest, youngest, newest vet. Please call your vets doctor whatever until they tell you you don't have to. How about that? We could certainly wrap up by saying it wouldn't kill you, folks, to say doctor. I, on the other hand, having spent before I was a dog and cat and now exotic pet expert, although I'm not an expert about that because Dr. Doug Mader teaches me something every week on our show, Exotic Pets, I often suggested that people use a first name, but that was with obstetricians, very male, patriarchal society when I first started writing about it. And I thought it was really important to get those docs off their pedestal. They were doing nobody any favors. And that's a whole nother conversation. Now the obstetrical world is mostly female and has a different attitude. But where vets are concerned, just keep in mind that they are vulnerable and fragile, kind of like your dogs and cats. You know, you how about try a little kindness and tenderness? It wouldn't kill you. And it might make the whole experience better for everybody. So thank you, Dr. Borkman, for what you've done both in your clinics and everyone whose lives you've touched that way, but also as the board president of Not One More Vet. If anybody wants to learn more about it and you're in the field, go to nomv.org. Look for the Lifeboat app. It might save somebody's life. If not yours, somebody you know and love. Thank you again for being here and all the efforts you've made to protect and cherish the people around you.
Thank you so much. And we're always looking for volunteers as well as sponsorship or donations. So definitely lifeboat.nambi.org. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show. There were a few more special companies that make this show possible, and I hope you'll try their products because they support my mission to entertain you with valuable information and advice. This show is supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, where they create holistic pet wellness products with an emphasis on their stewardship of the Pet Sustainability Coalition. Earth Animal makes a dazzling array of healing products for dogs and cats, as well as the innovative dog chew, No Hide, and the hybrid dry food, Wisdom, which is sometimes all that my picky Weimaraner Maisie will eat. The show is also brought to you in part by Evermore Pet Food, privately owned by two dedicated women who take human edible, ethically sourced ingredients to gently cook dog food that is then frozen in pouches and shipped right to your door. They founded and run their own company and answer to their own high standards without interference from venture capital investors. My dogs love it every single day.